Welcome back. Now, lots of people heading off on their holidays, and Dublin Airport is a busy spot this time of year. 100,000 people going through every day. And the man in charge of it is Dalton Phillips, Chief Executive of DAA, and he joins me now. Good morning, Dalton.
Good morning, Brian.
Now, there is a bit of a row going on at the moment. So we heard, with much fanfare yesterday, the good news that Dublin Airport is getting a €350 million loan from the European Investment Bank, and this is to improve facilities for passengers, I think. But on the other hand, we're hearing that you've decided to stop works on a €2 billion investment in improving the airport. So is this a different improvement project?
So the money that we took off the EIB, which was announced yesterday, it was a loan, that's for just current improvements. We have runways that are, 30 years old that need upgrading. We've got pavement out there that's from the 60s that needs upgrading. The row that we have at the moment is with the regulator. We are a regulated entity, which means we can have a maximum charge that we can levy on the airlines. Our charges are about 30 to 40% cheaper than anywhere else.
So how much per passenger?
We're €9.50 and Heathrow would be €27. So about a third of the price of Heathrow. And for the next period from 2020 to 2024, we've been given a price reduction of 22%, Brandon. So essentially, a huge reduction in the amount of money we have to run the airport. We receive no state funding. We're a commercial organization. And if we can't afford to build infrastructure, we won't. And
so the €2 billion project is off the table now.
Well, we're fighting back hard against the regulator because I think this is really bad for passengers. I think ultimately you're going to.
But is this not going to be mean cheaper airfares for passengers? Because is the airport charge not built into your flight?
So we have some of the lowest charges anywhere in Europe, but if you want to build infrastructure, I remember back in the noughties when people were saying that we didn't need to build new infrastructure, we didn't need T2, we absolutely did. We need new infrastructure now, we need new piers, new gates, new stands for travelling passengers. And if we don't invest, because we don't have the right resources, I think the travelling public is going to pay a big price, and I think it's reckless. So I'm very
they're
unhappy
not here.
About it.
So the Commission for Aviation Regulation. One thing they say is that when they did the set your last price, it was forecasting passenger numbers of 25 million for this year. But this year, you're actually going to have 32 million passengers. Therefore, more passengers to spread your costs over. So all the passengers should be paying a little bit less.
But we have some of the cheapest charges anywhere in Europe. As I said, Heathrow's €27 and we're €9. And the commissioner is suggesting we should be charging about €7.50. There is no, passengers want good facilities. They don't want to be travelling out of a yellow-packed airport. And that's essentially what will happen now. If we can't, you can't go to your bank manager and say, I want to build an extension on your house, but say, actually, my salary's been cut by 22%. You won't get the money. And our issue is we can't borrow the money. And the travelling public's going to pay a big price. And the airport is winning awards. So why would we want to yellow-pack it?
And you think it would represent the yellow-packing of the airport, these cuts?
I think if you can't invest in new infrastructure and you're talking about getting rid of people, sacking people for signs, etc., I think it's a really poor proposition. And we should be proud about our state airports. Dublin is one of the best airports in Europe. It's winning awards continually. We don't get everything right, but in general, it's a really good proposition. And the airlines, when we were building T2, a previous CEO of Aer Lingus, Dermot Mannion, he was arguing for higher charges to be levied to pay for this infrastructure. And now we're talking about more infrastructure, 22% less. Doesn't make sense.
Okay, and that's an ongoing process. And indeed, you are free, I believe, to make representations to that process to CAR. And I'm sure you have, and I'm sure you'd be making more. Now, none of this affects the new runway, but there's a kind of a row around that as well, which is that it was the new runway was granted planning permission, but with certain restrictions about movements taking place at night and early in the morning. Is that right? They're the critical ones. Can you explain that to us?
So the runway was back in the development plan in the 1960s, and I think Ireland is unusual in that it's got the largest airport in the country, and it's safeguarded land for over 50 years for this runway. We're building the runway as we speak. It'll be the fastest built runway In any major capital city since the war.
But the problem being that you need flights to come in late at night and go out early in the morning, is it?
What the regulations, well, the planning permission with which it was granted would mean that once this runway is open, the entire airfield would have to reduce the amount of flights by 50% at key times of the day, particularly between 11 p.m. and midnight and between 6 a.m. and 7 a.m., which is when the majority of our nighttime flying occurs.
But it's presumably also when the majority of the people who live near the runways want to be either going to sleep or staying asleep in the morning.
But it would be half of what we're currently at. And today in Ireland, you know, we're an hour behind Europe, continental Europe. We have a huge amount of traffic going out between 6 and 7 in the morning. We'd have to cut that in half. And you have to balance, Brendan, the needs of the economy with the needs of the local community. And it's clearly a balance. But if you think about Heathrow, there are 40,000 households impacted by noise on the new runway that they're planning on building. In Dublin Airport's case, it's 200 households. Now, for each one of those households, it's a big issue, don't get me wrong, but it's a balance here, and we're talking about restricting flights by 50%.
And look, those people aren't here, but I know they say this will have a massive impact on their lives, which I can imagine. They're saying their houses will be worthless. They won't be able to live there.
But we're not talking about putting more flights on. The legislation would be that we would have to cut from where we are now. And Ireland Inc., this isn't a Dublin Airport issue, 85% of all flights in and out of this country go through Dublin Airport. People go to work out of Dublin Airport. You know, they're flying out on a Monday morning. We would have to cut that by 50%. And I think it would have a significant impact on this country. So it's a balance.
Okay. So aviation is a long day. Imagine airports are always turning around and Dublin Airport isn't the only one under your control. Are you on all the time? Are you working all the time?
Well, it's very much a 24/7 business, and we never close. And what we have over 100,000 passengers going through the airport every day. It's sort of like Slane Castle every day.
So tell us your day.
So I live in Wicklow, so I get up early and
What's early?
I'm gone by just after 5.
You're out the door at 5.
Yeah. Right. So I go to a CrossFit a gym in Swords where there's a class there at 6 a.m. I'm probably 20 years older than everybody else. And Owen, the gym instructor there, kicks the 7 bells out of us. But so I go to the gym in the morning. Then I'm in the office all day, which could be doing anything. There's a whole variety. I mean, we're a big business. We operate in 13 different countries. Clearly, Dublin Airport's one of our biggest business, or is our biggest business. We're in Cork and various other international operations. So it's a full day and then back out to Wicklow in the evening.
So do you get much time to see the kids or that?
Look, they're long days, and I came from the retail environment where, you know, you worked 6 days anyway. So there's not a lot of time to see the kids, but you see them at the weekend, and blessed to be living in Ireland and being around family.
A text there about climate change, and obviously it's funny how many people come on the show and a lot of people text about climate change in relation to various different things, from music festivals, but obviously a big one in aviation. And we are seeing it, aren't we, in Scandinavia? We're seeing
a lot of flight shaming.
Yeah, flight shaming.
And look, this is a big issue. It's the carbon, which is the issue, not the flying. But clearly, we have a footprint that we leave. I mean, ironically, the fashion sector has double the carbon footprint than the aviation sector, and the IT sector has a similar footprint to the aviation sector. And nobody's challenging how much we're taxing or using the internet.
It's a question of what things get traction, isn't it? Are you not worried at the moment that there's a lot of pressure on people about their flying?
There's a huge amount. And I think the industry, we need to do a better job in the industry talking about what we're doing, because there's new technologies in terms of aircraft. I mean, Aer Lingus this week placed orders on new aircraft, which are 30% more efficient than the current generation, which today are 50% more efficient than the 1990s. So there's a lot going on. There's about $15 billion spent a year in the sector in terms of looking at aviation technologies. We're doing a lot in the airport. We're reducing our footprint significantly. We're moving to LEV, so low emission vehicles. We've done a lot on our lighting, water. energy, etc. So it's a big issue. We need to focus on it. But I think it needs to be, you know, in proportion to other sectors as well.
Now, you've worked across all kinds of different retail businesses, from grocery to BTs and everything. But people might have been surprised to see you coming into the airport sector. But you have been a flying buff since you were a kid. It's kind of in the family, isn't it?
Yeah, so I was brought up around aviation. Both my mother and my father were pilots, as were my grandparents. In fact, my mother, I remember as a kid, she did her first solo in Dublin Airport, and she pushed me out of the plane, left me on the grass while she went off and did her first solo. So we've been around aviation forever, and I got my pilot's license when I was about 21. So very, you know, it's great to be in Dublin Airport.
Yeah, your family is kind of fascinating. So tell me about your grandfather. So he was a flyer as well. His was Osborne Phillips, and he was American, correct?
That's right.
And tell us about Osborne and his contribution to humanity.
So he was American, and he, just after the war, had a flying accident, fell into the channel, and was in there for a number of hours, lost his hearing, and so moved to Ireland. Because he just wanted to sort of move to a different part of the world. But he was interesting because he picked up different inventions along the way, and Ziploc, for example. Do you remember the old Ziploc bags?
Yeah.
So he stumbled across that, and I don't think he got a good enough patent out of it, because certainly...
You look at the crowd in Scandinavia who came up with the Tetra Pak.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, well, that didn't happen with my grandfather.
Okay. But there was enough money to buy the homestead in Ireland, and then the egg business developed.
That's right. Yeah.
So people might know this. You grew up in the egg business was the family business.
Yeah, so he set up a business called Ballyfree Farms, and with my father together, they, you know, it was poultry and turkeys, and I used to go to school in an egg van and be tipped out from the egg van, and obviously all through the summers you would work in the business, and I'd be on the back of delivery trucks going in and out of Queensworth, as it was back then, or Powers or whoever. So always around retail, which is really where, you know, when I left school, I had a choice of did I want, you know, be a pilot or go into retail, and I ended up going into retail.
So did you want to be thrown out of planes or thrown out of the delivery van? Listen, the other text coming in. Somebody says, Dalton, if Dublin Airport is the best in Europe, try going through T1 at 7 a.m. And once you finally get through security, another half an hour walk to the gate. It's a joke.
No. There are times when we don't get it right, and you've got over 100,000 passengers going through every day. There are times when we can do things better. But in general, compared to other airports, we run a good show. I think there's a tremendous amount of experience and strength in the staff. They work hard. I mean, this is tough work. You close up the terminal, essentially, the cleaning, just after 1 o'clock in the morning, and by 3:15, people are coming back into the terminal. And that's why we need to invest in new facilities.
And you're actually very engaged with those details of a person's experience when they come to the airport, aren't you? You brought in the smile and search philosophy, I believe.
Well, walk in my shoes would be, well, there's a smile and search, but...
Yeah, we'll talk about walk in my shoes in a second, but do you not have a notion of smile and search, that people should have a nice...
Yeah, and I think our security staff do an amazing job. It is one of the hardest jobs on the campus, and I think that people, you know, want a nice welcome, and I think our security staff under huge pressure, because you've got all sorts of different passengers coming in. You've got people going to funerals and people going to honeymoons.
Yeah.
And they need to have a degree almost in psychology, the way they treat our passengers.
And in fairness, no matter what unearthly hour of the morning it is, and no matter how you're feeling, they are always relentlessly cheerful. So you mentioned walk in my shoes there. Tell us about that.
So I came from the retail environment where it'd be very normal to be on the shop floor, spending time stocking or on the tills. And we have a program within DAA, which is all the senior teams. So there's about 70 of us spend one day a month on a shift on the front line, trying to get closer to our staff, trying to get closer to our passengers and understanding the needs. Because sometimes in a big organization, we have nearly 8,000 colleagues around the world, you can become a little bit removed. So we do a task.
So what have you done recently?
I mean, we've been running this for nearly a year, so I've done cleaning, I've done baggage, I've done taxis, you know, there's a whole range of different ones.
Okay, on the taxis, text here. Could you ask the person from DAA why they are refusing taxi permits to drivers while there is long queues waiting for taxis? And I mean, in fairness, the taxi situation out there has got much worse in the last few years,
well,
hasn't it?
The taxi situation is a very difficult situation. We're down by nearly 50% the amount of drivers in the country at the moment, and by 25% the amount of vehicles on the road in terms of taxi vehicles. So we're in a consultation process at the moment, looking at how we can improve this. We charge our taxis €1 a day, essentially, to come to the airport. So, you know, we're not trying to make money here. We need to do a better job. We need more taxis on the road. The taxi population is aging. We need to encourage a better transportation system in and out of the airport. So I'm totally with your passenger there, or with your caller there.
Very straightforward question here. Please ask Dalton, why are so many flights being delayed?
So we're at the height of the summer here, right across Europe. This is a European issue, and we work closely with Eurocontrol, which manages, you know, the airspace right across Europe. But it's the busiest period, and it can be very frustrating for passengers.
Now, there's two questions here, one from Limerick and one from Cork. Cork person wants to know, Dublin Airport is a fine airport, but it's already too busy. Why not expand the other airports, which are very empty most of the time, and the regions need the business badly? So that's Jim in Cork. Certainly, anytime I'm at Cork Airport collecting people or whatever, you would think this airport seems quite underutilised.
Well, Cork is the fastest growing airport in the country at the moment, so it's growing 10% year on year, doing tremendously well. We've got a fantastic team down there bringing in more and more routes. So we do need to do more with our regional airports. We obviously control Cork, and as I said, it's the fastest growing in the country, faster than Dublin.
Coming through T2 at 2 a.m. last night, toilets locked, ATM out of order, and taxi queue 100 deep, embarrassing for Ireland. And you see, that's someone's first experience. They land in this country that's supposed to be, you know, the envy of Europe, our growth rates and our the sophisticated tech and all that kind of thing. And that's going to be their welcome.
Well, I look, huge sympathy for that passenger. And I think that's why we need to invest in this future programme. That's why you can't yellow pack this airport further by reducing charges to a ridiculous level. But I think in general, our staff do a terrific job. And, you know, it's not us giving awards to ourselves, that the airport wins awards.
Your father, to go back to you, had a very strong faith, and he used to organise a Christian youth festival, and you have quite a strong faith yourself now, don't you?
Yeah, so we were brought up with a traditional Christian environment. We all sort of came to faith in different ways at different times. But yeah, my faith would be hugely important to me. And my father used to organize these incredible music festivals, non-denominational, just bringing youth together and allowing youth to discuss some of the more challenging issues that they face today. So he died, unfortunately, nearly 10 years ago. But we've all come to have an important faith. And for me, principle, you know, it's key to who I am.
Is this something you came to later in life?
Yeah, I came to, my Christian faith really developed when I was sent to New Zealand. One of my first jobs was in New Zealand in retail, and I was just incredibly lonely out there, and I started going to church, and I remember one day a talk by the vicar, and it was very much, you either believe this stuff or you don't. And I sat back and I thought, no, I believe this. I believe there's a God. And it's been pivotal, key to me ever since.
And you're quite involved in the church at the weekends out at home?
Yeah, in our local church in Wicklow, my wife and I run a youth group on a Sunday evenings with the teenagers there. And I love it. It's
do you? And what do you do there?
So we would... there's obviously a lot of ice breaking when you've got a load of teenagers, and then our there'll be a talk on an issue, and we get people talking. I mean, there's so many different challenges that teenagers have today, and we like faith can be, we need to bring faith into a more contemporary language, where, you know, sometimes church can be just so boring. And so, yeah, it's run through our church, but we hope we're having some impact.
Okay, so after your week at DA, when you rarely see your kids, that's what you're doing at the weekend. So that's interesting. Now, Brenda, will you ask Dalton why there is that ridiculous loop system in the roads in Dublin Airport? The buses leave Terminal 1, then have to loop back in for Terminal 2. That's from Norman and Bray.
Yeah, it's Terminal 2 came along after Terminal 1, and that is the road system. But again, a lot of this $2 billion investment will try and pick up some of these challenges. I mean, I don't sit here, Brendan, saying we've got it right, but I think we've got a good bunch of staff who are trying to do a good job in challenging circumstances.
Yeah, one other question. I can relate to this. Why does a person sometimes check in, go through security at T2, and then you end up walking to T1? And as you will remember, when you have small kids with you as well...
Because the check-in is by airlines. So if you're an Aer Lingus, you check in T2. They, you know, the airlines don't have check-in in both terminals.
Dalton, you, as I said earlier, you've had a kind of a multivariate career around retail and everything. And I suppose you worked in Brown Thomas here, which very much was, you know, became a signifier of Ireland in the good times. It's still going strong. So you've been through boom and bust and everything. Where do you think we're at right now in the country in terms of, are we getting a bit boomier from what you're seeing?
Well, the ERRSI said recently that the economy was at full potential, which I think is code for full tilt. I think it's different from 2008, in so much as that was very much a construction-led boom. But I think we have to be cautious, and we can't. We've got to listen to the naysayers, and we can't shout them down. But there are a lot of learnings from last time. I think in our particular world of aviation, you've got to continue investing even in the downturn. So in the last downturn, people thought it was, we were lambasted for building T2 in the last downturn, and now we're absolutely full. In fact, that my office is in the old terminal from the 1940s, and when they built that, they were lambasted, and we've kind of grown out of that. So I think at an airport level, you've got to keep investing, because over the long term, aviation has continued to grow. But I think we need to be cautious. And I see a lot of the millennials around who really don't have the scars on the back that you and I might have from the last downturn. And I worry about that.
Why?
Because I think, this idea that it's going to be different and it's okay and I can leverage myself up. I mean, it's clearly housing's more difficult now. But I do worry that there is a generation that really haven't experienced what a lot of us have.
And are you seeing them working for you?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
So it's a large part of our team are millennials. So I think we it's incumbent on all of us to remind people and not forget the past. And just as I was saying, well, it is slightly different. It was a construction-led boom last time. Actually, even I am, starting to rationalise.
Yeah, it's different
this
time.
We've got to be careful.
Yeah. Okay. Dalton Phillips, thank you very much. And now at 12 o'clock, we'll pause for the Angelus.